The Moment of Lift: How Empowering Woman Changes the World. Author: Melinda Gates. For years, Melinda Gates has advocated for women's rights. Throughout her journey, she's met people who built schools, saved lives, ended wars, empowered girls, and changed cultures. Many of these people came from the poorest countries in the world, yet they were the ones who inspired Melinda and showed her the true impact of lifting women up. The Lift of a Great Idea. Back in the 90s, when Bill and Melinda Gates started in philanthropy, they wanted to fight for the poor. There was a clear inequity in the world that those living in luxury failed to see. While in rich countries, people had access to advanced health care, proper education, and security. In poor, alienated areas, people struggled to get their most basic rights. They were the outsiders of the world, those who were left out of all the privileges the rich enjoyed. The reality of the world came as a shock to both Bill and Melinda, so they became determined to change things. They started the Gates Foundation with the goal to fight poverty and illness, to educate the poor, and to include those who were alienated. And they decided on their very first quest, to get every child vaccinated. Back then, millions of children died every year due to the lack of proper health care in developing countries. The first initiative of the Gates Foundation was to supply vaccines to those areas. And by collaborating with governments and organizations, the death rate of children under 5 dropped to as little as 6 million a year. During one of the campaigns, Melinda traveled to Malawi, Africa. There, she saw mothers standing in line to get their children vaccinated. Each one had walked for miles despite the scorching sun and the several children clinging to her clothes. These were mothers with more children than they could feed, and definitely more than they could protect. The impact of contraception goes even beyond a woman and her children. When a woman is allowed to choose when to get pregnant, she is more prepared to raise healthy children with greater potentials. She is able to afford their education, so when they grow up, they'll have better chances of finding good jobs with good salaries. The whole family gets out of poverty. Other families follow, until the whole society is saved. Melinda's realization led to a great idea that by lifting up women, she can transform the world. Education, employment, economic growth, all these are linked to women empowerment. The more empowered women are, the less crime and violence there is. In short, women empowerment creates healthy societies. Delivery matters. In a small village in Shivgara, India, a woman fainted while giving birth to her first child. It happened in the middle of the night, and no one was there to help. As the sun came up, a 20-year-old newly trained health provider arrived. Her name was Ruchi. Ruchi checked the baby. He was as cold as ice. The mother was still unconscious, and the whole family was freaking out. Ruchi lit the fire and brought blankets to warm up the room, but that didn't help the baby. As time passed, he grew blue in color. He couldn't even cry. It was a case of hypothermia. The baby was going to freeze to death. Ruchi knew of a method that could help save the baby's life. It was called skin-to-skin care. Simply, a mother would hold her baby close to her bare skin, so she would transfer heat to him. Not only did this technique prevent hypothermia, it enhanced an infant's immunity, protecting him from infection. Ruchi turned to the baby's aunt, who refused to give her nephew skin-to-skin care, claiming that it would transfer the evil spirit inside the baby to her. So after a moment of hesitation, Ruchi decided to do it herself. She opened her sari and held the baby close to her skin. She covered herself up with a blanket and waited for the baby to get warmer. A few minutes later, the baby's cheeks turned pink, and in a few more minutes, she started to cry. She was back to life. When a girl has no voice, equal partnership becomes impossible when there's a big gap in power between the man and the woman. This is the case in child's marriage. In many countries, families force their girls to get married while they are as young as 5 or 7. A girl has to leave her school, abandon her family and friends, and travel to another village so she would move in with her husband's family. After marriage, the girl has to do all the housework for her husband's family, and soon she has to become pregnant and to carry a burden of a child. The younger and less educated the girl is, the more appealing she becomes to suitors. Voice: a wife that would obey their orders without much debate. Many girls lose their lives giving birth. Many are beaten up or abused in their husband's house. Melinda even encountered a girl whose husband has sold her to become a prostitute because he wanted more money. All these girls stand voiceless, with no one to fight for them. Child marriage is devastating in every possible way. Patricia's breakthrough. Patricia is a farmer who lived in Dimi Village, Malawi. She spent Christmas Day working on her farm, making sure her seeds were planted perfectly. Patricia was also a mother who couldn't afford to send her kids to school. She worked hard day and night, yet she had no hope in lifting her family out of poverty. Luckily for Patricia, her husband agreed to join her in a program called Care Pathways, which taught conventional farming tips. The program also included sessions about equality. Patricia and her husband participated in an exercise where they role-played each other. She got to order him around, like he usually did to her, and he had to obey. In another exercise, the couple discussed the family budget. Patricia got to explain why her farming supplies mattered. After the program, Patricia's relationship with her husband changed. They became partners who discussed important matters and made their decisions as a team. They agreed that they needed to get a loan to buy improved seeds for Patricia's farm. So they did, and as a result, the harvest quadrupled. Finally, the family could afford the school fees, and they had plenty of food for the kids. Seeking the source. To this day, the number one cause of death for girls between 15 and 19 is childbirth. One in every three women get physically abused or forced into sex by a member of her own family. In 113 countries, there are no laws to guarantee equal pay for equal work. So a woman can work as hard as men do and get lower salary. Many families in developing countries send their boys to schools while their girls stay home to do unpaid work. In a country like Yemen, a woman has to take her husband's permission before she leaves the house. And worst of all, many of these girls and women accept these conditions above as normal. A woman doesn't even have to live in a developing country to be discriminated against. According to 2017 statistics, women make up almost half of the U.S. workforce. Yet women are still alienated. They get lower salaries, fewer chances of promotions, and less mentorship and training, especially for key positions. Not to mention that the U.S. is one of 7 countries in the world with no clear law for paid parental leave. Gender bias does more harm than good. While it gives men a false sense of power, it leads to a lower productivity, declining health, broken family ties, and even poverty. To fight all this, one has to dig deep to find the roots of the problem. Why does the world see women as inferior? How did it all start? Melinda suggests that the bias started with poor understanding of religious scripture. For the longest time, religions have been dominated by men, many of whom distort scriptures depending on their personal bias against women. When religious leaders misinterpret the Holy Bible, the Quran, or any other sacred scripture, they reach conclusions that serve no one but their own status. The root of the bias also extends to those who write laws. Ever since the ancient times, most legal systems have been biased against women. The Code of Hammurabi, which was created around 1776 BC, stated that a life of a woman cost 30 silver shekels, while a life of a man cost 60. Obviously, no woman was included when the men came up with that law. Another example is the story of Anthony Comstock, one of the most stubborn enemies of contraceptives. In 1873, Comstock established the New York Society for the Suppression of Vice. He claimed he intended to fight lust, the boon companion of all crimes. Comstock had no problem saying that women existed only for the pleasure of men, that their only job was to marry the men and to carry their children. With the help of his allies, Comstock did his best to keep women stuck where they were. Not only did Comstock push for a law to make contraceptives illegal, he pushed for a law to illegalize all discussion about contraception. Even doctors were not allowed to bring it up. The subject of contraception became a taboo. If a woman dared to use them, she would be arrested and shot. As a result, many women died during childbirth. Many died trying to abort an unwanted pregnancy. And many committed suicide because of the shame of using birth control, the shame that Comstock created. But what gave him the right? What gave Comstock the right to decide for all women while he had no understanding of their needs? What gave him the right to speak for women who died during birth or women who struggled to feed their children? When Comstock proposed his notion, many government people voted for it, of course. None of them were women. But to create a fair legal system, women and other alienated groups have to be included. In short, it's easy to defend our own views by attaching them to traditions, religion, or even morality. But on the issues of the conscience, there is one factor that matters most: empathy. You can't be just unless you understand the suffering of others. You can't be moral unless you empathize with them.